Katha Anupinna Sutra Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it.
So good evening, everyone. So I'm going to start out by maybe embarrassing Peter Harris a little and observing what you've probably observed as well, that his talks, his prose is so lyrical that it is poetry. His entire talk is a poem. And they just are absolutely wonderful. Not only do I have the position of following him the next night, but it turns out we wrote about the same koan, and that's happened before. We teachers don't tell each other which koans we're writing on, because we made the decision that if more than one of us writes on the same koan, it's absolutely okay, because we're going to talk about it differently, express it differently, and we're also going to see it in ways that are remarkably similar. So I think that both things are kind of interest. The ways in which we differ in how we see and express the Dharma, and the really fundamental ways in which we're saying the same thing, perhaps. So, with that introduction, the Mumankan case 16, Unman said, "The world is vast and wide like this. Why do we put on the 7-panel robe at the sound of the bell?" World is vast and wide like this. Why do we put on the 7-panel robe at the sound of the bell? Tick, tick, tick. The hoe rhythmically strikes the earth, breaking apart the crusted soil and pulling out the weeds. An earthworm, finding itself exposed to the heat of the day, crawls back under a clod of dirt. Overhead, a hawk cries as it circles slowly, riding the rising currents of heated air. Beads of sweat run down the monk's forehead. The morning sun is already strong as it beats down on her head. Bong! The temple bell sounds the call to service. Quickly, the monk runs off, places her hoe in the tool shed. Entering the temple, she finds her robes on a hook near the door and wraps herself in the kesa, the 7-paneled robe of the Buddha, without even breaking stride. Then she walks calmly into the Buddha hall, hands folded in shasu, and silently stands in her appointed place. This is the world that is vast and wide, which Unman is speaking of. There are no thoughts of self and other, no separations between the monk, the hoe, the earth, the sun, the worm, the hawk, the bead of sweat, and the temple bell. Everything interacting seamlessly, one continuous dance of life that extends to the furthest reaches of the cosmos with no barriers. In this world, the question why does not arise. The monk responds as life unfolds before her, just as the earthworm responds to the sunlight and the hawk to the rising currents of air. She doesn't distract herself with the question, why am I doing this? She doesn't imagine herself projected into another place and time. Her activity right here and now is complete. If hearing this description, you say that Uman is talking about the absolute, you will be wrong. If you then say that he is talking about the relative, you are also wrong. If it is neither relative nor absolute, what is it? This place where sun shines, earthworms crawl, hawks fly, and monks plant their hoes in rich garden soil. So Shin is an opportunity to experience living in just this way, to open to the vastness, the unimpeded flow of life. But what do? As Todd said the other night, we bring our precious, well-worn bag of delusions and distractions. We worry and we wonder, why am I doing this retreat? I could be lying on a couch at home watching a movie right now. Why am I practicing Zen? What conceivable benefit can come from all of this sitting, walking, chanting? Our resistances arise repeatedly, blocking our ability to experience our life with openness and real freedom. Real freedom is not the ability to do anything we want. It is the ability to do the things that we must do, free from the impediments of resistance, frustration, resentment, fear, and distraction. It is the ability to throw ourselves wholeheartedly into the activities of our lives. It is the ability to accept whatever conditions life sets for us and to work as skillfully as possible with those situations. Life almost never goes according to our wishes and desires. Those only lead us down the rabbit hole of suffering. Life goes as it goes, and we must accept and adapt. The earthworm lives this way. The hawk lives this way. The weeds in the garden live in this way. But the monk hoeing the garden must practice continually in order to live this way, because she is human. Our human nature sets us up to suffer unless we work actively to change our automatic responses. This session is set up so that activities flow together smoothly. The schedule is set. The bells and other prompts tell us what we need to do. There's no need for a lot of planning or decision-making. All we need to do is the next thing that's in front of us to the best of our ability. How much of our precious time and energy is being spent fighting against those things that we have no power to change, rather than focusing on changing those things that we can change? As John Senchan says in On Trust in the Heart, not liking brings weariness of the spirit. Eventually, as the retreat progresses, if we have practiced consistently, our resistance begins to slacken. We get into the groove. Things seem to flow more easily. Time, which seemed to pass interminably slowly at the outset, begins to flow more quickly. When that happens, our energy and our spirits rise. And all that happens in spite of the fact that our external circumstances haven't changed in any readily discernible way. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could live all the days of our lives in that manner, fully energized with enlivened spirits and a zest for life, regardless of the circumstances? This brings us to the broader question of form in Zen. When it is understood in this context, form is our teacher. Sometimes it brings us to the jagged edge of our comfort zone. When that happens, we may find ourselves questioning the value of form. Ours is not just an informal culture here in the U.S. We are really anti-formality. Therefore, we balk when we come up against Zen rituals. They may seem foreign or archaic or simply repetitious and boring. They may seem to be a waste of time, pulling us away from Zazen, which we believe is more important. Of course, some people also bring some baggage from the religion of their childhood, if there was ritual and their association with that religion ended up being painful or unsatisfying. The very fact that all these forms of resistance and many others come up actually shows us that the form is doing its job. It is helping us to learn to let go and live with greater freedom. When, as we become more able to live in the present without needing to run away or distract ourselves, not only is much of our suffering alleviated, we also become more open to the suffering of others, which, as bodhisattvas, is the deeper intent of our practice. In this Mahayana context, how do we put on the seven-panel robe at the sound of the bell? Permit me to introduce you to Mr. Ron Finley. Mr. Finley heard the sound of the bell when he picked up a tomato that was labeled coated with shellac in his local South Central Los Angeles grocery store. That awakened Mr. Finley to the reality that there was a complete lack of healthy food in his community. Mr. Finley donned the seven-panel robe when he decided to plant some shit, his words, turning a strip of city-owned land in front of his property into an edible landscape for the community. In this day and age, turning the grass that our culture is so fond of, our green wasteland, the repository for so many of Monsanto's toxic products, into a vegetable garden to give children some real healthy food is a revolutionary act. In appreciation for his act of compassion, Mr. Finley received a citation, not the good kind of citation, a fine, and an eventual warrant for his arrest. However, word spread quickly about the gangster gardener, sparking a food justice movement around the world. Where will we be when we next hear the sound of the bell? More than ever before, the world needs us to put on the seven-panel robe in response to that sound. We must not hesitate, separate, or excessively cogitate. That will get us lost in the weeds. We must act from the place where the world is vast and wide like this, allowing our compassionate nature to express itself. Please consider this deeply. It is so very, very essential. Compassionate action is the medicine for the illness of our time.
Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow.